Today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
What is commercially viable? What is going to work on this cover? More often than not, it's going to be a three-quarter length photo. More often than not, it's going to be high-key lighting as opposed to low-key lighting. More often than not, it's going to be on a very bright background or a white backdrop versus a very dark setting. Then from there, it's understanding the specific client and what they need. I have a client who they never want to have their subject have their arms above their head in the photo. I have another client who they will always want motion. So whether it's someone punching or jumping or kicking or something, there has to be a motion to it. But that's the conversation you have in your project kickoff meeting is, what are you looking for? But after that, then it's on you as the creative to really choose what story you want to tell.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Today, we're talking about what it takes to photograph 500 magazine covers. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast, a weekly podcast for those who believe that moments matter most and that a beautiful photo is more than just a sum of its settings. A show for those who want to do more with the gear they have to take better photos today. And now, your host, Raymond Hatfield.
Welcome back to all of you, my lovely photo friends, to the Beginner Photography Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Raymond Hatfield, and we have a great interview for you today. This is one of those interviews where you're going to wish that you had like a pen and a paper just to write down all the amazing quotes that today's guest, James Patrick, shares with you. He's got a ton of experience, a ton of knowledge, and just is really awesome at the way that he breaks things down and kind of puts them into little buckets, I guess you could say. But obviously, we'll get into that in a bit. But first, before we do, I really want to give a huge shout out for this week's five-star iTunes review that comes from Moose Amy. Moose Amy, I don't know who you are. These usernames are hilarious. I love them. She says, I have been creative and I have had a love for photography, but never had the equipment to pursue it. I found the podcast and started listening in an effort to maybe get a better understanding of my camera. The photographers that Raymond interviews are down to earth and eager to share their knowledge and expertise. I've learned so much and gained much needed confidence in my shooting that I'm close to launching my own photography business. Thank you for the time and effort that it takes to develop the content that we all can learn from and enjoy listening to. Amy, I'm assuming that your name is Amy and not Moose, probably. So Amy, oh my gosh, thank you so much for that amazing review. You know, to be honest, it does take a lot of time to put together these podcasts from, you know, researching guests, reaching out to them, booking them, coming up with the questions, the topics, recording the interviews, editing the interviews, putting together show notes and, you know, everything that goes into it, recording these intros and outros, doing the edits before finally publishing them. It takes a lot of work. And I just want to say thank you. You know, your review like makes all that worth it. The fact that you are getting something out of this podcast and that it's not just, I don't know, superficial or something, and that you're genuinely learning and obviously making huge progress in your own photography. That is what I'm here for. I love to hear that. So again, Amy, thank you so much for leaving a review on iTunes. I truly appreciate it. Obviously, it lets me know how I'm doing, but it also lets others who are maybe unaware of the show get an idea of what it's about. And it truly does help out the podcast in a massive, massive way. So again, Amy, thank you so much for leaving that review. So we are about to get into today's interview, and it is with commercial fashion photographer James Patrick. Now, James Patrick is he found a really interesting niche for himself before this niche was even a thing, which again, we're going to get into in the episode that I know that you're going to love. He shares so much in this episode, not only about how he got started, which is kind of a roundabout way of doing so, but also kind of what it takes. A lot of this is mindset. You know, it's very common to have imposter syndrome in an industry like this, where it's like fashion and fitness as well. So he shares a lot in terms of mindset and just how to get over it. And you're really going to leave this interview feeling like, you know, motivated and energized to just go out there and feel like you can conquer the world. I know I did. So really excited to get into this with you. But first, it's really unfortunate. I was trying out a new way to record the podcast that does both audio and video, just in higher quality, better quality, so that I can, you know, continue to deliver to you the best product that I can. And unfortunately, it did not work. It did not live up to the hype of everything that I had read. And I think that maybe it would be suited better for like 10 or 15 minute podcasts, but it did not work out for this hour long podcast, which is really unfortunate. So there are some audio issues. Again, I really hope that you can kind of look past them and listen to the value that James is going to be sharing with you, because there is a lot. All right. With that, let's go ahead and get on into this interview right now with James Patrick. I'll be totally honest here. I get quite a few email pitches from photographers who are looking to become a guest on the show. And most of them, it can be pretty difficult to find any info on them as far as what it is and what they do. But when I looked into you, you had quite a list of accomplishments, especially when it came to the world of fitness photography. I'm really excited to get into that. But before we do, can you just kind of start me off and tell me how you got started in photography, and when did you know that photography was going to play an important role in your life?
You know, I'm so glad you asked that question, Raymond, because I feel like so many of us try to resist that calling to jump into artistry or into a creative field, because there's that nervousness or that fear, that hesitation that this is not a real career. This is not a sustainable career. This is not a safe career to be in. And with that, we kind of go the safe route. For me, I was a journalist, and I was a journalist in high school, and I went to college for journalism, not because I had a inherent love for writing. I eventually developed a love for writing, but it was just what was in front of me. And obviously, my parents wanted me to do more. Hey, get into engineering, or, you know, you can make a lot as a pharmacy tech. but really, it was I was just pursuing this passion I generated for crafting articles or writing stories. Now, as a journalist in college, I needed money. And I was working at this newspaper, and my editor said to me one day, says, you know, we're out of staff photographers. They're all out on assignment. Can you take photos of your articles to go along with your articles? And I was like, yeah, sure. Do I get paid extra for that? And they're like, well, yeah, two bylines, two paychecks. I'm like, count me in. Yeah, yeah, I'm all for it. And he's like, here's our staff camera, go out and take some photos. I'm like, all right, fine. And, you know, I didn't think anything of it. And he stops me as I'm walking out there. He says, do you have any idea how to use that? I'm like, no, not a clue. And this is 19-year-old me just kind of fumbling through, really without much direction in what I wanted to do with my future. I was just really meandering around to find what it was that I enjoyed doing. And I had this belief that, you know, we don't necessarily find passions. We start doing things and we create passions. Okay. Mm-hmm. I had no passion for writing before I started writing. It took a lot of writing for me to develop passion for writing. Same with photography. How could I be passionate about something I've never done? So yeah. After a while of I'm taking lots and lots of photos, I end up working at a different newspaper. The publisher of this newspaper takes me out of the staff writer pool and puts me in the staff photography pool. Now, he could have hated my articles. That's possible. I don't know. Or he could have loved my photos. I want to say he loved my photos more than he hated my articles. Yeah. But then I started working there as a staff photographer. I became the photo editor of this little small community newspaper, became the photo editor of a magazine. So I got to work hiring other photographers early in my career, building together a team of photographers, analyzing portfolios, determining what imagery went into a magazine, what imagery went into a newspaper, why we're using certain photos, the post-production of the photos. So I really got to understand what clients were looking for, because I was a client while still building my freelance photography business on the side. Now, when I graduated college, I'll be honest, Raymond, I took a safe job because, hey, photography is an expensive hobby, right? Or, you know, mm-hmm. I didn't know any real professional photographers. It's not like I was surrounded by all these great professional creatives. So I took a job in marketing that I thought was a safe job. But I could not stop creating work on the side. And that, after a while, and I'll be honest, it took a long while for me to build that confidence to be like, you know, I can't actually do this. This is something I'm choosing to do. This is not a risk. In fact, it's riskier to stay at my current job than it is to create something of my own. I found out as an entrepreneur, I control my future. I control my income. I control the direction of my business. When I worked for someone else, the company I worked for at our height, you know, this is 2006, 2007, we were at, I think in my local office that I was running the marketing for, 139 employees. By the end of the recession, just a few years later, we were down to 39. And you want to talk about this being a safe job?
Right. Mm-mm.
So I actually left my job at the bottom of the recession, took off in my photography career, and at that point, I could not look back.
Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos. Okay, so much to unpack right there. It, obviously, you know, that's quite a journey to go from I enjoy writing to oh, I guess I have to take my camera with me on this assignment to capture some photos, to then going out and starting your own photography business, you know, when the time was right for you. I want to know, what was your main source of photography education, you know, because that's a big part of it. We can all get that camera. We can all, you know, shoot in auto for a while and fumble around in manual. But how did you learn to capture the photos that got you to the point to where somebody thought, you know what, he's done with the writing and we're going to focus on photography for him?
It was more just learn by doing. I took one photo class in all of college, and only because it was a prerequisite for my journalism degree. It was a black and white photojournalism class that we were using film at the time. Didn't do particularly well in it. I want to say C minus was where I ended up with that. In my defense, I don't think I had a good rapport with my teacher. but once I started getting serious about it, what I wanted to do, apart from just testing constantly, you know, and this is before everyone had a YouTube channel. You can just learn by watching YouTube. It was really just trying to study photos in magazines and books and just trying to see how light was being done and manipulated as best I could. While I'm working as a photographer, though, I remember I got this job. I'm still working my marketing job at the time, so this is very early in my career. I got a job shooting for this magazine, and the photo editor of the magazine hired me because she saw enough in my work to like my work. But at some point, she says, you know, have you ever considered assisting another photographer? And I was like, well, no, I didn't know that was something that could be done. I'm kind of going into this backwards. Like, you know, I had all these jobs in photography before I really even grew my own career. And she says, I recommend you do that. And hey, when your client recommends you do something, especially a client that pays a lot of your bills, they're doing it because they're trying to help you. And she introduced me to this photographer who I ended up becoming his assistant. Even while I had my own business, I became his assistant for, it was about 3 years, a little over 3 years. And, you know, assisting another photographer, I was able to really gain a nuanced understanding of, you know, of course, the technique of photography. Okay, and the technical aspect of it. But more importantly, what I learned was how he ran his business. Everything from how he bid on projects, how he communicated with clients, what that process looked like to try to secure a project, but also what his rapport was like on set, how he handled the energy on set, how he worked with subjects on set. And that right there is invaluable. I could never have gotten that from a book or from a magazine or studying lighting. And I feel like, you know, if you look at the aspect of photography, it kind of falls on a bandwidth. On one end of the bandwidth, you have very technical photographers. I have friends who are extraordinarily technical, who will quote from me the inverse square law, and they measure everything, and they take the most technically perfect imagery, you know, where they're calculating, you know, and measuring the light, and they're measuring the color temperature, and they're tweaking everything on their computer while they're doing it. And, you know, they make these technically perfect photos, right? And then I have photographers at the other end of the spectrum, like the guy who I interned with for 3 years, who was a commercial and fashion photographer, who he knew the technical side, but he would never sit there with a measuring tape measuring how far his light source was from the subject. He'd never sit there with a color checker passport to get the perfect color temperature, because he wanted to feel his way creatively through his imagery. And that's really the method that I took and the positioning I took, which is I wanted to feel my way through. So why do I put the light there? Because I want the light coming from that direction. If it's too harsh, I feather it. If it's too bright, I brighten it. If it's too close, I move it away. I just feel my way through as I'm trying to figure out what it is I want to create. And over the course of my career, I realized that, hey, you can actually take really good looking photos, and lots of people can take really good looking photos. And now today, information on photography is ubiquitous. You find it anywhere. And it's so much easier to learn how to make great images now. So my position was, I'm not going to take great looking photos. That's not my positioning, because anyone can do it. When you hire me, you're not hiring me because I take photos, but I will make images that work. There's the difference that I wanted to have. And I want to make images that work. And what that means is, when you hire me, I have to understand what you need these for, because then I'm going to get into making the right images that work. And how can I do that? Well, guess what? I work for newspapers and I work for magazines. I know what images work. Okay. So that's what I built into my own branding very early in my career. But it did help, to answer your question, it did help working for someone else to gain that insights, because, you know, this whole idea of being self-made, we're not self-made. Sure. One of the rules I have in my business with all my clients is, you don't get what you don't ask for. Ask for help, ask for support, ask for guidance. Some people might not give it to you. That's okay. That's fine. You don't need to worry about them. But the more you ask, eventually people will start to give you help, and they will start to give you insights, and they will start to give you advice. And that's how you start to figure out what is that next step in front of you that you need to take.
Wow. So I'm interested in that transition that you had from, you know, working as an assistant. You know, at this point you had started, you said for 3 years you had started, you had already been in business, and then you transitioned to doing assisting, or you assisted for 3 years?
I assisted for 3 years. So I had probably been shooting at that point for maybe 4 or 5 years. So it, you know, it almost like, you know, part of me would feel like, oh, is this a step back? And the other part is, right, no, not at all. Like, look at how much I'm learning. I get to be on these really cool sets and work on these really cool projects as an assistant. And that right there just gave me that extra layer of confidence when it came to my own project. So my business was increasing during this time as well.
So I'm interested to hear your thoughts on maybe if you've done this, if you've taken on an assistant before, but as somebody who, you know, as you currently had a business, where that motivation came, I suppose, from this other photographer to take you on, because I would think, you know, many new photographers would feel as if this is just, you know, killing your own business. Like, there's somebody out there in my local network, in my local area, who is also a photographer, who I'm going to be teaching these same things to, that then they're going to go use, and, you know, run their own business, I suppose. Do you have any thoughts on that?
So I get this question when I post like a behind the scenes on how I light, like, let's say a big cover project I'm doing. And the question will come in, aren't you afraid that someone's going to take your lighting style and replicate it? Aren't you afraid that someone's just going to copy it, and they're going to do it, and they're going to do it for less, and they're going to take your clients? Okay. I mean, sure, they could, but I've been doing it a lot longer, and I've shot 500 covers in my career. They got a lot to catch up to. And if they catch up to me, great, great. When, you know, I have a lot of confidence in my clients. My clients are not going to hire someone just because they're less expensive, a cheaper option. They're going to hire someone because they're a better option. And if someone goes to my client with a better option, then the client needs to hire them and not me. And we saw that a lot in 2008. What we saw in 2008, where clients were getting a lot savvier and more discernible about photographers they wanted to be working with. Now, it was so easy for photographers to say, listen, young professionals are coming into the industry and they're ruining the industry. They're giving away too much. Like, they don't understand photo rights and usage. They're doing photos and videos. They're not even charging for all this extra stuff. They're ruining the industry by lowering market value of photography. I saw it completely differently. I saw it as, no, we're not determining where the market's going. The client is determining where the market's going. Our job as photographers, as entrepreneurs, whatever you want to call yourself, our job is to understand what our clients need moving forward and to service them with that need. Now, that need is never the same year to year. It constantly evolves. We're seeing it evolve right now, where a lot of the work that I've done historically is becoming less relevant in a new media, okay? Where photographers who do, let's just say, massive content creation, where they're just shooting thousands of images and giving clients massive data dumps of photos. Hey, guess what? That's more valuable to a lot, especially social media influencers. Okay. Yeah. So are social media influencers likely to hire me? No, probably not. That's okay. But if people want to target magazines and target media and get published, they probably are going to work with me. Or if people want to target, you know, fitness, you know, when I got into fitness photography, really, it was not a thing. This was, you know, 10 plus years ago. This was not an industry of where it is right now. And at the time, I didn't even call it fitness photography. I called it sports photography because fitness photography was not even born yet. Eventually, it blended into sports and fitness photography. But, you know, for the longest time, I was the only one, not just in my state, in the entire southwestern United States, in the entire western United States that was really doing any of this. Now, it's become a lot more common and a lot more, you know, popular.
Yeah,
I have plenty of competition I never had years before, but I'm not worried about that. There's so much work out there. I'm not worried about the projects I'm not getting. I'm worried about projects I can get. And if I'm not available for 90%, whether it's my rates, whether it's my availability, whether even my style, some people look at my style like, it's not for me, right? So the whole, you know, back to your original question is the person who took me on as their assistant, he didn't take me on as an assistant because he saw me as a potential competition. He took me on as an assistant because someone helped him out. And the reason I've taken on assistants is because, hey, someone helped me out. Do you think I would not be where I am today had that publisher at that newspaper taken me out of the writer pool and put me into the photo pool? Had he not encouraged me to build my book? Had he not helped me get that job at that magazine as a photo editor? I would not be where I am today had I not interned for that other photographer who showed me his lighting styles, which are not my lighting styles, who showed me his cadence with clients, which is not my cadence with clients, but he illuminated so much for me and allowed me to figure out what the next step was in my career. And to this day, I mean, it's been over a decade. We're still really good friends. We still talk to each other all the time. We still support each other. When he lands a project, by the way, we share clients too. When he lands a project with a client that I work with, he gets a letter of congratulation from me or a text or an email. When I land it, he's the first person to call me to say, hey, I saw the cover. I loved how this turned out. Okay. I'm not worried about competition. You know, earlier this morning, I had posted something on my Instagram, you know, a new project I'd working on, and some photographer, I have no idea who it is from. I don't even know. I don't even know who it is from some other state, commented on my photo trying to rip it apart. Okay. Mm-hmm. Does this matter to me? No. You'll always have that. If you want to pay attention to it, focus on the people in your ecosystem who are there to support you and never be afraid to ask because you do not get what you do not ask for.
Oh, that's such a great last sentence right there, especially for new photographers. You know, those who are listening right now are those who are most unsure, I guess, of who they are because they see all these other photographers who are established, who do have their thing, and they're just starting out and they have no idea what it is that they want to focus on, what it is that they shoot, what their style is. They're always looking for their style. And I think that right there kind of sums it up. It's like, don't worry about that. Kind of focus on yourself, put in the work and get it done. So thank you for sharing that. So, but real quick, before we move on, you know, you talked about your magazine covers right there, and I definitely want to get into that. But before we do, I want to talk about the fitness aspect of it, because as you said, when you first got into it, fitness wasn't even its own genre. It was sports photography at the time. So how did you get into fitness, and what would you, in your own words, what would you describe is the job description of a fitness photographer? There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
this is right near the bottom of the recession when I started to make this pivot. Before then, I photographed kind of a little mix of everything because I didn't really know. So I think we kind of all go through that where it's like, oh, I'll photograph family portraits and fashion and headshots and corporate work and events. I did so many events. I got hired for events all the time, which, by the way, I hated events. I hated it so much. I did it though, because my fear was if I don't do everything, I'll become irrelevant. So I have to kind of be a jack of all trades. That was wrong. As the economy started to dip down, so did my work. Because if you're a client and you're looking to hire someone, let's say you're trying to hire a food and beverage photographer to photograph a food and beverage issue for your magazine. Are you going to hire the person who's a generalist who can do it? Or are you going to hire the person that specializes? If you have a very finite budget, just hire the specialist. Okay. That's who you're going to hire. Well, I wasn't the specialist in food and beverage. When you're hiring for fashion, are you going to hire the person who has done it once or twice, or the person who does it all the time? You hire the person that does it all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So I lost a lot of work as the recession was kind of really starting to ramp up, or I should say fall down. And with that, I started to think, well, fortunately, I have this job in marketing at the time. You know, maybe photography was a fun hobby while I had it. Maybe I'll just put the camera up and just focus on my real job. Okay. Which it's like, it pains me to say that, but hey, guess what? A lot of your listeners have been there too, or maybe yes. They're there right now.
I've been there. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to put the camera up though. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the sign of a creative, is you show up even when it's harder, you still show up because you feel that calling to create. I cultivated that calling to create. So I still was showing up, but I was like, I can't keep doing what I'm doing because it's just not working. What if I just did one thing and just made one thing my thing? And you know what? I got my job, so I'm not worried about it taking off. You know, just do one thing. So I looked at my portfolio of all the imagery that I was doing. I was like, what do I like doing the most? And for me, it was working with athletes. It's like, I love working with athletes. I was an athlete all growing up. Maybe I'll just work with athletes. Maybe that will be the thing. Now, simultaneously to this, I'm reading in business magazines. You know, I work in marketing, so I constantly would read business magazines, Entrepreneur, Forbes, Inc., Money Magazine. And I was reading that the health and fitness industry was going to explode. Well, when I thought about health and fitness and wellness, this is a lateral step from the sports industry. Yeah. These two are very closely connected. And so I was like, well, that could kind of be my thing, is athletic photography, sports photography. I can kind of make that my zone, as it were, and only do that. And if I get some work, great, that's fine. Okay. But if I'm going to do this, I want to be very intentional about it. And getting intentional about the work I was doing was a big game changer for me. When I got intentional about it, the intentions are with what work do I need to create? Okay, who do I need to be working with? What images need to be in my portfolio? So I went out and started making those photos. But the second side of that, which is even more important, is who do I need to be working for to make this work? That I started to do research. What are the companies just in my state? I started looking in my state only. And when I looked at companies, I looked at really three things. I looked at magazines, so any publications that feature sports or anything health and wellness related. When I made a list, there was quite a few of them. Okay, so I got a list now. What are the ad agencies that work in sports, fitness, and wellness? Made a list of those. Okay, what are the companies based in Arizona that are in sports, fitness, and wellness? And I made a list of the companies. Then I started to get very focused, and I started to pick up the phone. I started to call them. That was not fun or easy. And not that it's technically complicated. It's not hard to call. We all know how to pick up a phone and call someone. But to call someone and say, hi, this is my name. I'm doing this kind of work in photography. I'd love to show you some samples of my work. That brings up a lot of fear. Okay. Yes. That, well, who am I to do this? What if they don't like my work? What if I'm not good enough? What if I don't have enough experience? And you know what I learned in making all these calls is that it doesn't matter. None of that matters. In the sense that the thing that comes up when we talk about this is imposter syndrome, you know, that I'm not going to be good enough and I'm going to be judged for doing this. But listen, what I want to say is that every single one of us is an imposter. I had no idea how to be a photographer until I picked up a camera. and figured it out. I had no idea how to host a podcast, just like you. We didn't go to podcast school. There was no manual we followed on creating a podcast. We figured out how to make a podcast by sitting down in front of a microphone, talking, and hitting publish. Same with blogging. I had no idea how to start a blog. I just blogged. Okay. Same with any of the things I've done. I wrote a best-selling book. I had no idea how to be a best-selling author, but I figured it out. Same with this. Being an imposter means you're figuring it out. Being an imposter means that you're doing the work that's required to get to where you want to go. And I got to be honest with you, of all those calls I made, I don't know if I can think of a single time someone was turned off by my work. Oh, we can never hire you. Oh, you know what they might say? The worst thing that might happen is you might not get a response. That is almost quite literally the worst thing that would happen. You might not get a response. Because why would someone be rude to you? And even if they were, who cares? Because someone else is going to be open to it. Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll keep you in mind. Or, oh, I really like what you're doing here. So I got used to calling people. And then all of a sudden, I started to get some people saying yes. And that turned into more people saying yes, which turned into more people saying yes, which turned into more people saying yes. And now I'm taking from targeting my state to targeting the southwestern U.S., to targeting the entire U.S., to targeting, you know, nearby countries, to targeting any company that I can find across the world within my zone, within what I was creating. And it was that got my business to skyrocket. And within just a few years of doing that, now I'm walking away from my marketing job because my photography work has more than doubled my income.
Yeah, absolutely. So now at this point today, say 10 years later, you have, as you said, you know, you photographed more than 500 magazine covers. And, you know, that cover photo, when you tell anybody, you know, a cover photo, there's this feeling like that's the elusive capture, right? You always think about the cover. Now, when I think of what that image looks like from a technical standpoint, you know, it's something like, I guess I'll let you describe that, you know. So from that technical standpoint, what are you looking out for that's going to make a photo stand out above the rest to be that cover shot?
I think there's two parts to this. The one is, I want to address what might be going through the minds of some of your listeners, because we can kind of make it sound really easy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I picked up the phone, I called a bunch of people, I shared my work. Mm-hmm. Okay. The hesitation that some might have right now is, you know what, maybe I just need to rework my portfolio a little bit. Mm-hmm. Maybe I just, before I show it to anyone, before I pick up that phone, before I send that email, before I put out that postcard, before I walk into that office, let me just rework my portfolio a little bit more until it's perfect. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm just going to tell your listeners, there is no perfect portfolio. It does not exist. I still, to this day, I've been making images a while, 19 years, something like that. I still don't have a perfect portfolio. I'm still trying to get closer to it. We will never create it. But the only way we get better at our work is by sharing it with someone else. It's the only way we get better. Okay. I would have no idea what images I actually needed to create unless I showed it to clients and got their feedback on it. Because without that feedback loop, we're just in our own heads trying to create what we think might work. Well, what we think might work doesn't matter, because what matters? Consumer behavior dictates everything. Okay. I'll share a quick example. I was trying to apply for this photo agency, and we thought it was just going to be one-on-one meetings with this photo agent to try to get signed to this agency. It wasn't. What he wanted to do was he wanted to interview us in front of everyone else who was applying. There was about 20 of us there, by putting our work up on screen and slashing us in half. Okay. Mm. Panic set in. Instant sweat. I was like, ah, this is going to suck. And he did it based on, all right, who's next? Okay, who's next? So of course I'm just like, oh, I do not want to be next. I'll just wait till the end. But eventually I was like, all right, you know what? I'm just going to rip this Band-Aid off. And I went up there and he put my website up in front of 20 of my competitors. And then he started asking provoking questions like, what do you want to shoot? Why do you want to shoot it? And then he says, all right, so you want to shoot sports and fitness portraiture? I said, yes. He says, that's your area. I said, yes. He says, well, you do okay work in that. Do you like shooting events? I was like, no, I hate events. He's like, then why the hell is events on your website? I'm like, that's a good question, sir. I don't know. And he says, do you like shooting architecture? I'm like, well, you know, sort of. He's like, take it off your website. Do you like shooting, all this. And he was pointing out all these things on my website that I still was leaving on my website, even though I was trying to say I specialize in something. I had all this miscellaneous stuff. He says, all of this stuff is distracting from your message. Mm-hmm. get rid of it. Focus on your area. That's what will move you forward. Now, had I never gotten that feedback, that was about as intense or difficult feedback as one could imagine. I never gotten that feedback, I would not have removed that stuff from my website, honed in my work more, and take myself to the next level. I ended up hiring he was the former photo director of Sports Illustrated, and he's now the current photo director over at the WWE. I hired him to just go through my work and cut it in half. I paid him money to cut my work down. Why? Because I wanted clients like him to hire me. So I hired him to tell me what to change, what to keep, what to get rid of, what to hone in on, what to look at when I'm cultivating the next phase of my portfolio, then the next phase and the next phase. So I feel like that's an important thing to distill down. Now, to hone in more on the question of, like, as we're trying to create that perfect image or that cover image or that cover worthy image, you have to understand, like, I just did a cover shoot 2 weeks ago and it was a 2-day production. We had to shoot the cover, had to shoot an interior spread. Normally we do it in a day, but the person was traveling out, so they want to spend more time in Arizona where I am. So I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to make more photos. Now, in this 2 days, I mean, we shot thousands of images, so many thousands of images. One makes it on the cover. Mm-hmm. It's about one. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of gets into part of it, which is, you know, we really spend the time to focus and to construct an image. Shooting a cover, it's a construct, okay? And a lot of people say, oh, you know, covers, they're so overly Photoshopped. Well, yeah, they're Photoshopped, but that's not really what makes a cover a cover. It's the setup, it's the lighting, it's the subject, it's the emotion that you're trying to evoke through that person, it's the angle, it's all of it. It's the hair, the makeup, the outfit, the styling. It's everything is what you're trying to communicate with this cover image. And, you know, in this cover shoot, what I usually end up doing in a cover shoot is I do what I consider a commercially viable image. Okay. Commercially viable image is an image that I know is going to move the magazine. That's going to help sell. Okay. Usually that means, you know, obviously the technical side has to be there, but more often than not, it is focusing on all the distracting things that you're removing from the photo. Okay. So it's like, what is the pose that's going to hit, that's going to jump off that cover, but without being too distracting in the sense that you're going to look at something. Okay. Like, oh, a great example of that is, you know, when someone's doing a side pose and their arm's hidden behind their body, people are going to wonder where that arm is, stuff like
sure.
that. Okay. Yeah. So it's getting the right pose that works for the subject, because not every pose works for the right subject. So this is why it takes a while to massage your way through. Okay. To get to that point where you're getting that right image, where they warmed up and they're giving you that energy through the photo. And is it the photo? Yeah. Is it your rapport with the subject? Yes, absolutely. It's that rapport that you have with the subject. It's what you're able to bring out of them that no one else can. And like I said, on that bandwidth, I am not the most technically competent photographer. I know how to do it, but I'm the person who's going to be on the creative side. I'm the person who's going to have the best connection with my subject. I'm going to pull something out of them that they didn't know was possible. So when they see that cover, they're like, wow. Did not even know we could do that. That's what I want to get to with my photos. But we go through a lot of photos, and that's that whole idea. There's that adage of, you know, my worst 10,000 photos were my first 10,000 photos. And I think, you know, let's honor that a little bit. We get through the stuff that doesn't work so we can get the one thing that does work. You could look at that like a success to failure ratio. You look at that like, well, I'm nervous to call clients because what if these first five clients say no? Well, what if my first 9,999 photos didn't work, but the 10,001 did, right? Uh-huh. That's a bad success ratio, but it's a success ratio we have as artists, and I'm okay with that. So it's about honoring that craft or that practice in order to create what you're trying to create with your work. And that was a long answer to your question.
It was a long answer, but you covered so much in there that I think is really going to help out the listeners. But my, I guess, follow-up question to that is what you were talking about. You know, you may not be the best technical photographer, and I completely understand that. I'm right there with you. I as well want to kind of get that emotion out of, as a wedding photographer, my couples, right? I want to show off photos that are going to make them look at those photos 10 years from now and think this was the happiest day of our lives, right? That's what I want. But when it comes to a wedding, like, I know exactly what's going to happen. This is going to happen here. This is going to happen here. I'm going to do this. I'm going to say this. I'm going to get a laugh. We're going to get the photos. Day's going to be over. But when it comes to fitness, when it comes to, you know, commercial work for magazines, there's more of an agenda, I guess, right? There's something that is trying to be pushed, either a story or something like that. So how do you come up with the ideas for the photos that you need to capture?
I think it's two parts. I think one is I have the experience of knowing what imagery is, and I go back to that idea of commercially viable. What is commercially viable? What is going to work on this cover? Okay, and I know that, all right, more often than not, it's going to be a three-quarter length photo. More often than not, it's going to be high-key lighting as opposed to low-key lighting. More often than not, it's going to be on a very bright background or a white backdrop versus a very dark setting. Okay, so these are things that are just pretty immutable. Then from there, it's understanding the specific client and what they need. So, you know, this is a nuanced example, but I have a client who they never want to have their subject have their arms above their head in the photo. Never want it. So I just know when shooting for them, you keep those arms down. It's not going to happen. I have another client who they will always want motion on the cover. Even though it's a three-quarter studio shot, they always want motion. So whether it's someone punching or jumping or kicking or something, there has to be a motion to it. But that's the conversation you have in your project kickoff meeting is, what are you looking for? And you're talking to the photo editor, the art director, the magazine editor, to get a sense of what they're looking for. But after that, then it's on you as the creative to really choose what story you want to tell. So when I'm doing a cover shoot, I always start with the safe image first. Okay, the safe image is the one that checks all the boxes for my client. Then once I shoot the safe image that I know I have that, then I'll shoot the image I actually wanted to shoot. And from there, that comes to maybe I wanted to try a different lighting. Maybe I wanted to try a different pose or a different action or a different emotion that I'm trying to show through. And for me, this is what we do as artists, is this is our testing ground. Like, we get a subject in front of our camera, it's time to test, and it's time to see what we can create. Okay, there's no sense making the same image, you know, 10 years running. If I was taking the same photos I did 10 years ago, that'd be a short career for me. I wouldn't even be taking those photos. So while I can take a commercially viable image right off the bat, now I'm going to test something. Now I'm going to try something different. It doesn't always work. That's okay. This is why we do it. It doesn't always work. Like in this cover shoot I did 2 weeks ago, we did the safe viable shot first, worked that shot for a couple hours. Then I was like, you know what? I have this other idea. And I, the photo editor at this magazine trusts me enough to allow me to do it. So, you know, I kind of built this setup and I tried something completely different. And I absolutely love how it turned out. I'm so excited because I've never seen this on a cover, this style of light before. Never seen it on a cover. I don't know if they're going to use it on a cover. I think they liked it. I think they're nervous about the viability of it on a cover, but they want to use it on the inside of the magazine. So I get the work that I love published as well. And this is kind of the balance that we have as artists, which is you have to take something the client's going to love, but at the same time, you don't want to sell yourself short as a creative. Okay. And that's really the best way I've found to do it, which is do the safe work first, the work that you just know is going to work, and do it the best you can, then start to play, then start to experiment, then start to test. And I got to tell you, when I look at, like, you know, not that I care about the awards I've won, but I look at any photo I've taken that's won an award, it's always the second photo. It's always the photo that I was testing with after we took the safe photo. Safe photos don't win awards.
Hey, Raymond here, and we will get back to today's show in just a moment. You know, if you want to photograph people, you know, families, portraits, weddings, engagements, you know that the elephant in the room is posing. You have a pretty good understanding of how to use your camera, you know how to make a pretty picture, but when somebody steps in front of your lens, well, imagine if you knew how to make them look their best and feel confident. That is what you can do when you understand basic posing techniques. So I want to give you access to my free posing guide over at photoposingguide.com. There are 9 different categories and more than 80 real example photos of poses that you can use for inspiration to rock your next session. Once again, you can download your free photo posing guide over at photoposingguide.com. Now, let's go ahead and get back into today's interview. Thank you for explaining that. You know, again, that this is kind of a world that I don't know much about. As a wedding photographer, this always interests me because I have a couple who need something. They're getting married. They want photos of their wedding. They look for a wedding photographer. Here I am. They book. Done deal, right? But when it comes to the sort of work that you're doing for magazines, for ads, for publications, I'm always interested in how that relationship works as far as getting you hired, because a magazine is always going to need photos. Are they, you know, you're not on staff at this magazine. So who is it that you're talking to get these jobs booked? And then can you talk to me a little bit about how the pay works as well, in terms of, is it just, here's the gig that we need, here's the money, or here's the gig that we need, send me a quote?
So I'll do the money one first, because it's a shorter answer. In editorial work, so when you're shooting for newspapers or magazines, 99% of the time they just tell you the rate. And that's just the rate's the rate. Every now and then they'll ask, what would be your price for this? Usually that doesn't really happen when they're hiring me for a shoot, but more so when they want to license a photo. So it's a photo I've already done. They just want to license it for usage, in which case I'll ask what their standard media placement is. I hate negotiating. Like there's a weird slimy salesness to it. My feeling is, hey, if I'm profiting off the work, this is great for me. Okay. And I really look at three things when it comes to whether or not I say yes to a project. And those three things are, what is the financial component of the project? So what I get paid. Okay. Second is, what is my creative control on the project? So, really those two are often inversely related. I will do a project, let's say magazine work doesn't pay a lot. I'll be honest, magazine work does not pay a lot, but it's really creative. They give me lots of creative control to do what I want to do. Okay. So inversely related. The third is, I'll say like a commercial shoot. I did a commercial shoot for a top online retailer. It was just 8 hours of me photographing someone putting stuff in boxes. I mean, yeah, great. Not that creative. You know, I try to make it interesting with light, but really it's just a person putting something in a box. There's only so much you can do with that. But that one paycheck was like my quarter's budget. Okay. So
wonderful. Yeah.
It's just an example. The third thing I look at is the opportunity scale. The opportunity scale can never be set for me. I set it for myself. So like, for example, if a client tells you, this is a really good opportunity for you, probably not. But when I look at it and I'm like, oh, this could be an amazing opportunity for me, then that kind of, oversees or overshadows the other two. So an example would be, a magazine comes to me and says, we want you to photograph this cover. So Real Story, a magazine came to me a couple years ago, said, want you to photograph this cover. It's a first round draft pick out of the NFL for our cover and interior spread. I said, okay, what are you looking for? And they says, oh, we love your work. We just need, this sort of image for the cover. After that, whatever you can kind of create for them that just pops off the page. I said, okay, what's your budget? They gave me the budget. It was really bad. And to the point that I was probably going to lose money because I had to travel, I had to rent gear, and I had to hire an assistant. So all things considered, I'll probably lose money, but I get full creative control. Now let's look at the opportunity value. I get a first round draft pick in front of my camera to do whatever I want for 3 hours. I got it. It was a 3 hour call time. I was like, that's a huge opportunity. So I said yes to the project. I lost money, shot the photos I wanted to shoot, took those photos, and after my embargo with that magazine was over, resold those photos to another magazine, so made money there, and used those photos as a cornerstone of my portfolio, which got me in the doors at Sports Illustrated. Okay. Leveraging opportunities is a part of it. Now, to hone in on who we're talking to when it comes to positioning ourselves and trying to get work, particularly media work, the first thing you're going to look for, depending on the size of the magazine, will dictate who you're looking for. The first person I look for is a photo editor, photo director, and photo assistant, somewhere in that range. Now, if they have all of them, guess what? I'm trying to build relationships with all of them. The essence of pitching is not just to get your work out there. It's to earn their attention and to build a relationship. This is a relationship business. I mean, I've worked with the same art directors for 10 plus years, and I have photo editors who tell me they can't imagine hiring anyone else. I earn that. I work really hard for that. Okay. But guess what? There's plenty of clients I have not gotten into yet. Why? Because they have other relationships, and I'm trying to earn the right to get a crack at a relationship, not to replace anyone, but to earn the right for a secondary seat on a roster. Because guess what? I spent a lot of times being the backup. And as a backup, sometimes your opportunity to come up to the plate happens, and that's your chance. Okay. That's your chance to knock it out of the park. Okay. So photo director, photo editor, photo assistant, those three lines right there. Because let's say you build a relationship with one, when they have their staff meetings or their debriefs, and they're looking at, okay, what do we have coming up for the next issue? Someone's going to mention, oh, by the way, I just got this package from Raymond. I've been getting some stuff from him too. Let's take a look at this. Now there's a conversation. That's how it happens. If there is not a photo editor or anyone in a photo pool, then I'm going to look at art director or creative director. Okay. Now, if there's both, just to understand the difference, if you do have a photo editor and an art director, always go photo editor, not art director, because the art director in that instance will control only the design and graphic elements of the publication, not the visual imagery. Whereas if you just have the creative director, but not a photo editor, that creative director does both. Okay. So that's creative director, art director, or art editor would be another one. If none of those exist, then I go directly to the editor in chief.
So let me, first of all, thank you for breaking that down. There's a lot more roles than at a wedding. Your position is much more complicated than mine. So I appreciate you breaking that down into something that I could easily digest there. But I want to talk more about that relationship building, because I know in weddings, you know, you could ask to take a, you know, a wedding planner out to lunch and you could talk and you can, you know, do that sort of thing. But when it comes to photo editors, are these the same kind of relationships where you're just like, hey, let's go get lunch and talk? Or is it deeper? Or how do you start to form these relationships when you're just getting started? You mentioned, you know, making just cold calls. How did you take it beyond that to form these relationships?
It's such a good question. So, I mean, it's very unlikely someone will allow you to take them out to lunch, and not just because of COVID and quarantine and all that.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
But just because they're real busy and they don't have a lot of time. My goal is to bring value to them. Right off the bat, I want to give you value before you've ever even asked for anything. So when I'm pitching, and I pitch a lot of different ways, okay, realize that as a photo editor, as an art director, as a creative director, part of your job is to find new people to work with. It's part of the description. So you always, especially the good ones, just like we as photographers always want to better our work. Guess what? Photo editors always want to better the work that they're putting out in magazines. It's just part of it. And if that means teaming up with new creative people or people who bring innovative ideas to a magazine, that's what they're looking for. Okay. Mm-hmm. So for some of it, it's, I think about, okay, four things I want to do to try to earn the work with someone. First thing I do is I try to research what the magazine's doing. And I look at, okay, what are they featuring? How often do they feature it? What is the look and really the cadence of this publication? Because every magazine has its own direction. Editorially, sure. But also visually. And I get a sense of what they do, what they run, and where I fit within that. So when I pitch to someone, I don't say, let me know if you could ever use me for anything. I say, this is what I'd like to do for you. Okay. There's a little bit of a difference in the shift where I say, listen, I understand you run this section. I want to shoot for this section. Here's what I can bring to this section. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'll give an example. I was trying to pitch this one magazine, and in every issue, they had a single page art image that was just like this really badass photo. It was like a kind of a shot in action and this emotional exuberance in the photo, and everything in the photo had to encapsulate energy and power and excitement. So there was a lot packed in this photo. So one of my first pitches, this magazine is, hey, by the way, I know you have this section. Here's a dozen photos I think would jump off the page in that section. That's a great way to get in, right?
Yeah.
But research is important. So I'll give an example within my industry. Let's look at Sports Illustrated, the magazine, versus ESPN, the magazine. If you were to look at these two, you're like, well, they're the same. Not at all. Creatively and art direction wise, not at all. You were to look at Sports Illustrated, I'm probably not the best suited to shoot for Sports Illustrated. Why? Because 9 out of every 10 visuals they use are shot in action. Okay. Meaning someone's at the game. It's of the athlete at the game. It's of the actual match itself. It's of the audience's reaction. I mean, they have a whole breakdown of what they look for their visual imagery. Very, very, very rarely, less than 10% of the time, is it a portrait. Okay. Well, what do? I do portraits. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm not the first person that they're going to think of unless they need someone for portrait, which is 1 out of every 10 projects. Okay. And by the way, are you going to hire me to do it just to do that? Or are you going to hire the guy who's already there, who you already have a relationship with? Okay. So harder to get in versus, let's say, ESPN, the magazine. It's the exact opposite. Almost everything in ESPN, the magazine, over 90% of what ESPN, the magazine does is creative portraiture, not in-game photos. Okay. They have a completely different creative approach to how they want to tell that story. So I'd be better suited for ESPN, the magazine. Does that mean I can't pitch a Sports Illustrated? No, but I have to be very clever in what I'm sending them, what I'm trying to position myself with, what I want to create for them, okay? And show why I bring something different to this publication. So that's why we do the research. From the research comes the pitch. The pitch is, like I said, the pitch does not need to be complicated. This is who I am. This is what I want to do. This is why I can do this for you. That's it. That's a pitch, okay? That could be over email. It could be a phone call. That could be me, and I've done this, going out to New York to run through Manhattan and try to meet with as many photo editors as possible. I've done it, right? Yeah. So, or all the above, Okay.
Yeah.
And pitching can be one of the most fun things you do. And I've tried to be really creative and fun with pitching. So like I'll do everything from like emailing out to clients, about what we have going on. I've done postcards out to clients. I've created my own magazine as a fun gift for clients. I figured, what do magazine editors love? Magazines. Let me make a magazine. Yeah. It was just a promo magazine, 48 pages of my work that I sent off to them, but it was a cool thing. And also for face-to-face meetings, epic leave behind. Okay.
Yeah.
I've done where I just bring my portfolio and sit down and have a meeting with them. Lots of photographers take one-on-one meetings if you call and ask them. All right.
So with all of these things, right, the magazine, the postcards, the newsletters going out, the face-to-face meetings, these are all just forms of marketing, right, for your business, to pitch your business. So what have you found to be the most effective, or I guess let me rephrase this, what are you going to do this week to market your business?
If I had to choose and just point at one thing, it's trying to get a meeting. Whether it's mm-hmm. a phone meeting, or if I have to do a Zoom meeting, or in a pre or post COVID world, if I can go into their office and sit to them face to face, nothing will sell you like a face to face meeting. Nothing. And that's why I've gone to Manhattan. That's why I've gone to LA. That's why I just go to where they are. And like, so, you know, every few years, I'll book a trip to Manhattan where I'll spend a week in Manhattan, and I try to book as many photo meetings as I can for an entire week. And I'll just book them back to back. Okay.
What do you bring with yourself? Obviously, you know, you're saying that if you can get face to face, that'd be great. But are you bringing these magazines? Are you bringing these books? What is it that you show them? Yeah. Everything?
So, I mean, you're not going to get a lot of time. You know, I've been in these meetings where I get 90 seconds. And I've been in other meetings that I get an hour, right?
Okay. What do you do in the 90-second meeting? What do you do? What's the number one goal for you?
You just show them your portfolio book. That's, uh-huh. I mean, the number one thing is you have a book that they want to flip through. Okay. And I would say that over an iPad, just because once again, my belief is if I'm working with a tactile medium, they want something tactile. And I like curating my book. So I have a book, it's in a nice, metal binder, and you know, it's 11 by 17. So it's bigger than most portfolio books that they look at. And there's a certain feel to it. And I allow them, I pass the book over to them. I want to thank them for the opportunity to meet with them. We sit in a conference room and I allow them to look at work without my interruption, unless they pause on something or respond to something. Okay. Mm-hmm. When they pause on something, respond to something, that's an invitation for me to give more insights into maybe behind the scenes about that image, or what made that unique, or why that project was really fun to me. Okay. So, you know, they might stop on one and they're like, oh, well, this is really cool. I'm like, you know, yeah, I got to work with that person for, you know, a couple different projects. And, you know, this photo jumped out at me because of XYZ. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then they might say, okay, thank you so much for coming in. Appreciate it. That might be the extent of it. Okay.
Yeah.
Especially at a lot of the bigger magazines, if you're able to get in there. You know, for some, I've been at some where it's just like they start looking at my work, and then we start talking about like, oh, you're from Chicago. I'm from Chicago too. What part of Chicago are you from? You know, all of a sudden now we're in a conversation. To me, that is the perfect thing, because that's my goal anyways, to build a relationship. And so if I get to have a personal conversation with them, and then I had one where it was like, oh gosh, have you ever seen our office? I'm like, no, I've never seen your office. Would you like a tour? Yes, I would. Yes, yeah. I would love a tour. Yes. Oh my gosh. So show me where you work. Oh my gosh. This is the new layout. This is so cool. Like I remember one time I was interviewing with Sports Illustrated, which at the time shared an office with Golf Magazine. They were the same company. And I had just finished a massive project with Golf Magazine. And so the guy from Sports Illustrated is like, do you want to see the office? I'm like, yes, I do. Absolutely. Like I love being in the Sports Illustrated office. It's like, oh yeah, come check it out. And so we walked by this one area. I'm like, hey, by the way, there's my photo on the wall right there. He's like, what? I'm like, there it is right there. Yeah, I just did this layout for Golf Magazine. He's like, shut up. You work with Golf Magazine? Yeah, I do. You know, and he's like, oh, let's bring the photo out of there over and let's have a conversation, the three of us. So like you see how like you start to do this. I had a project in LA, you know, a couple years ago, and there was a magazine I wanted to work with out there. So I was like, by the way, I'm gonna be in your area. I would love to have a meeting with you, even for 30 minutes, just drop by your office and just meet you and the team. They're like, oh, are you sure it's not out of the way? I'm like, no, I'll be in the area. It was 90 minutes out of my way.
Yeah. But that doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Yes, I want to show up. And I got to meet this great team and got to sit and have conversation with them. But a lot of the questions that, well, when I'm sitting and I get to have a conversation with them, I'm going to ask what they need. Not what I want, what they need. Because of course they know what I want. I want to get published. I want my work to get put out there. I want to get the paycheck. Of course that's what I want. They know that. So does the other 500 people. But I want to be asking, what do you need? What do you have coming up? What could you need help with? Because if I understand what you need help with, I can better position myself as a resource or a value added to you. So when I come to you, I'm coming to you with options and solutions versus, hey, give me work.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So then at that point, you say, what can I do for you? And then they say, you know, this is our magazine. This is what we do. This is what we need. And you're like, that sounds fantastic. I can deliver that for you. Mm-hmm. And what you're hoping to end that meeting on is, that sounds great. We'll be in touch.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's, we'll be in touch. You're not going to get a project the day of. I mean, you might.
Right.
You might. It has happened. It will happen. But your goal is to start honoring that relationship. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the thing about relationships is these are not one night stands. We're investing in the long term relationship here, which means we work to build it before we ask for a transaction. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just letting them know that they're there, constantly sending them ideas. Hey, I just did that. Letting them know what you've been up to is another part of it. Hey, I just worked on this new thing. Want to share? Or, hey, by the way, I know you mentioned that you were a big Cubs fan. I just saw this really cool pictorial and this other thing about the Cubs. Want to share it with you? Or, hey, by the way, I noticed you said you were in this book club. I just read this new book. Want to share this with you? Okay. Earning That's the right example, for their attention.
Except nobody's a Cubs fan. Everybody's a Dodger fan in my book. Everybody here. So you're shaking your head no there. Okay, we'll let that one pass. We'll see in the future.
Yeah, I noticed the Dodgers Cubs.
March 9th, Dodgers Cubs spring training day. You know what? If you want to go, I'd be happy to buy you a ticket if you're going
to
be there.
I would love to. It's down the road from me. I live just south from Mesa in Gilbert. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. Right down the road. And I've worked at Sloan Park. It's such a gorgeous, gorgeous park. You know, here's the thing about pitching is, one pitch is never going to be enough. You send off one pitch, you might not hear back. Okay, let's assume email. Then you send off another one, and you don't hear back. Now, you get in your head and you think, I'm not good enough. They don't like my work. You know, maybe I should just go back to whatever it was you were doing before, right? These are the, so an example is, I was pitching this one magazine, and every month I sent them a new postcard on my work. Different photo on an 8.5 by 5.5, you know, nice thick postcard. And on the back, I wrote this handwritten note addressing it to them personally about the work I want to do with them, how excited I was to work with them. 9 months of this, plus emails, plus phone calls that aren't being answered or returned. 9 months, right? Now, a lot of people would think, man, they really don't like your work, or they don't want to hear from me, right? But then I'm on Instagram one day, and I'm looking at the photo editor's Instagram account, and I'm flipping through, and there's a photo of her working late one night, and there's just a caption of like, hey, work, you know, deadlines on a Monday or something like that. And there's one thing I notice in the photo. She's sitting at her desk in this photo. She has this big wall behind her, and there's something tacked to the wall. In fact, there's only one thing tacked to the wall on this blank wall. So I zoom in on it, and sure as hell, it's one of my postcards. In fact, I went back and checked. It was the first postcard I sent her 9 months earlier.
Hey.
So this has been on her wall, maybe upwards of 9 months. But yes. I'm thinking she doesn't know I exist. But there, my logo is in her face every single day for almost 9 months. And I'm thinking she doesn't know I exist, or she hates my work. That's the light bulb moment that I had right there. It's like, she just doesn't need me yet.
Yeah.
Keep pitching. Keep getting out there. Keep trying to earn that relationship. It can take 8 to 12 points of contact before they even notice that you've sent something. 8 to 12. And if you're the person who's, by the way, 90% stop after one, which means if you even send out one follow-up, you're ahead of 9 out of every 10 people by sending one follow-up. 8 to 12 points of contact.
As somebody who, you know, as just from my personal life, has had to send out, you know, constant emails for couples to, you know, here's the information that you requested. Hey, are you still interested? Hey, I still have your date available. Like, what's going on? That feeling inside of, do I follow up or do they hate me? You know, is something that can really dig deep, and it can really, you know, hurt. So hearing that story right there is just motivation, I hope, for not only me, but I guess everybody listening, to not worry about that, to go ahead, do that follow-up, reach back out and try again, because worst case, they say no. And as you said, you know, they're not going to be super rude about it and, you know, try to crush your dream. So again, thank you so much for sharing that, because that's a big light bulb moment.
You have to look at it this way. So think about, like, put yourself in the shoes of the buyer. Okay.
Yeah.
You only are actually paying attention when you're in the market to buy it. Okay. Like, you own a home. How many ads do you get for landscaping services, for plumbing services, for pest inspection services? Do you know when you start thinking about hiring a pest inspector? When you have a pest problem. Okay. And you're like, oh, what was the last thing I saw? The fortune is in the follow up. This is why we follow up. And this is not messaging them every day or even every week, but hey, guess what? Every 2 weeks is fine. Every 3 weeks is fine. No one's going to be upset about that. When I think about, like, with my podcast, I get pitches every day for people to be on my podcast. And all they do is they go into a folder. I don't even read them when I receive them, because I'm not looking for podcast guests right now. And then maybe once a month, or once every other month, I'll sit down with my assistant and we'll say, all right, what pitches have we gotten for our podcast? And then we look at them all. Okay.
Yeah.
And so if you're sending follow-ups, guess who I notice first? People sent the follow-up.
That's a great tip right there. I'm going to write that down because I can absolutely use that. Thank you. So moving on, you know, oftentimes new photographers are very limited in the gear that they have or the resources compared to most professionals like you. Can you tell me maybe about a time when you first started where you personally had to just make do with what you had because you didn't have all the gear that maybe you have today?
I mean, the first story that comes to mind is when I forgot the batteries for my camera on a commercial shoot. That was panic inducing. Oh my God.
Did you just make camera sounds all day?
I stalled. I stalled so hard, and I sent my assistant running to a nearby Best Buy to buy a backup battery for my camera. It was like a group portrait of all these CEOs. So, like, people whose time I should not be wasting.
Oh, of course.
And it was like their board of supervisors. And the second I realized, so they were in a meeting. So I was setting up in their lobby to take this photo after the meeting ended. And once I realized that my camera, because I went to take a test shot, once I realized my camera wasn't turning on, I'm like, is my camera broken? Then I realized that the battery pack's gone. At that very second, their boardroom doors opened. And I just turned to my assistant immediately. I says, run to Best Buy, buy me this battery. If you get a speeding ticket, I will pay for it. Go. I probably shouldn't be advocating that. But so he bolts off, and I spent the next 20 some minutes posing them. Oh, okay, let's move you over here a little bit, and you know what? Let's have you two switch. You know, I was wrong. Switch back. You know, 20 minutes. Oh my God! And then testing. You know, testing by, like, using the light meter. I never used my light meter. I used it that day because I had to look like I was doing something. And then he rolls up, and I had my hand behind my back, and he dropped the battery in my hand and slapped in the camera, and we were off going. But man, okay, so that wasn't the best answer to your actual question, which is things that have to make do. Listen, we've all been there. We've had to bootstrap our stuff together, and this is what we do as creative, is we find creative ways to do things that are signature to us. You know, I mean, I've, you know, through my career, I've developed a certain lighting style that I tend to do. And my lighting style for my cover shoots usually involves, it's about an 8 or 9 light setup. So that's pretty big. But guess what? The last few cover shoots I did, I used one single light. That's it. One head, nothing else. Like, I could have bought that for $300, and there you go. And there I'm off making photos. You know, I every now and then I'll have fun where I'll just play around with natural light. I never consider myself a very savvy natural light photographer. I've always considered it something that I always want to get better at. So it's something that, because it's something that makes me uncomfortable, I do it more. So I actually bought a medium format film camera, and I just run rolls through it shooting natural light. Just testing, like, the photo I posted today on my social media was in a natural light photo where I opened up the door in my studio and had all this natural light pouring in my studio, and I was just doing some natural light portraits just because it's something that, you know, 20 years doing this, I still want to get better. So if I can make a photo that I'm proud of using natural light, and I can make a photo I'm proud of using a single light, as much as I'm proud of the photos where I use 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 lights, well, okay. It's the gear doesn't matter. And this is why, like, I get So like when people are like, oh, what kind of camera do you use? I think they ask it because they don't know what else to ask. I'm like,
of course.
I use whatever camera is I'm using. I've used every camera that I could possibly get my hands on. Some I like, some I didn't like. They all kind of worked. So whatever was fine. I remember my first digital camera was this like advanced compact Sony CyberShot. But guess what? I shot some magazine covers with it and they looked okay. So it worked. It's whatever I had in front of me that was working at the time.
So I got one last question for you, because I know that we're, you know, closing in on, we've actually gone far past our allotted time here. So I really appreciate you, you know, sticking around. Do you have time for one last question?
Go for it, man.
Okay. Obviously, you know, as you just said about the gear, and I hear this all the time, and I believe it as well. You know, the gear doesn't matter. The gear doesn't matter. Just shoot with what you have. But I've heard a lot recently from listeners of the podcast and members of the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group, then why upgrade? What's the point of buying that top of the line gear if the gear doesn't matter? So what's your take on that?
I don't buy the top of the line gear. So there's the answer right there. I don't. My light heads, I still have some of the first light heads I ever bought. Uh-huh. Almost 15 years later when I started to buy lights. So I got some like old ass Alien B 800s in there. I gave away my 400s because that's all I can afford when I was in college was the 400s. I still have them. And guess what? They make great backdrop lights. I don't care. Like, you know, you think I need to buy a, you know, expensive Profoto light to light my backdrop? No. No, it's like, hey, they throw light. That's kind of all I need them to do is to throw light. So, you know, when I look at upgrading gear, it's more so what can I do that I couldn't do before? So an example would be I have different lights that I take on location that are more portable. I got some battery packs with them. Now, are they more expensive than, you know, the Einsteins or the ABs or all that stuff? Yeah, they're a lot more expensive. But why did I buy them? Because they make my life a lot easier because they're portable. Mm-hmm. I don't have to take this massive kit with me. I can put everything in a backpack and I'm good to go. Okay. So I bought it for the convenience factor and because, you know, especially I shoot a lot on location. Sometimes we have to like, you know, we shoot on like mountaintops. We got to do a bunch of hiking. I don't want to lug I don't want my assistant to lug a bunch of gear up. I have a photo of one of my assistants like climbing up a mountain with this like bag of light stands, like over both shoulders, like trying, like just trying to keep his center of balance forward versus yeah. backwards. Cause if he went back, I mean, he's going down. It's not going to end well. And when it comes to upgrading cameras or lenses, it's what am I going to do that I can't do already with my current thing? And sometimes, not often, but sometimes it's client focused. So, you know, we were doing a shoot for a magazine and they're like, we want to show this progression in this motion. And we want like, you know, 30 to 40 photos showing this progression, this motion. I'm like, well, I mean, my photo, my camera shoots, I think, 5 or 8, I don't know, whatever the Mark IV shoots. So that it probably won't work. Bottom line, my Mark IV won't work for it. Mm-hmm. Well, the Sony Alpha or the A9 or whatever, that kind of does it, right? So I'll just rent it and just do it. And then it makes the client happy. Now, did they need it? Well, they thought they did. So, and they were paying the bill. So I just rented it. That's about as much as I kind of upgrade it, with the exception of like, I would say most of my investment, honestly, Raymond, has been downgrading because I've kind of loved buying older cameras and just running rolls of film through them just to kind of see, like, I'm kind of learning, like, oh, I bought, like, a Mamiya 645 and been running rolls through that.
I got one.
Yeah. Yep. And that's fun. I've also bought a 6.7, which takes a lot longer. Because it has the hip viewfinder, and you know the back on it catches a lot, so I gotta kind of jimmy the film through it sometimes. But and the only reason I do is just to see what else I can make. So I buy a lot of used stuff. Every now and then I'll go on like Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace and just see what people are selling. Like, could I have fun making something new with this? But it's usually all old or secondhand stuff.
Well, James, gee, I don't know how to end it any better than that. You have been an open book today. You have been very open as far as, you know, every question that I've thrown at you, you have answered it, you know, far beyond any expectation that I had for your question. In fact, I had a lot more questions for you, but you answered all the questions that I asked so thoroughly that we didn't get to them, which means that I'm going to have you back on at some point to have a round.
We'll make it happen. I'd love it.
But before I let you go, can you let the listeners know a little bit more about you as far as where they can find you online and what you got going on?
Sure. So easy to find online. You can just Google James Patrick and most of my stuff will come up. My website's jamespatrick.com. My Instagram is at jpatrickphoto. But, you know, I could give a gift to your listeners. I did create a free lighting guide, which I just go through a handful of some photos that I really enjoyed and just what I thought about when lighting these photos. So if that's of interest to any of your listeners, easiest way to get that, send me a text message, 480-605-3254. So that's 480-605-3254. Just send me a text message. Say that you heard me on the Beginning Photography podcast with Raymond and just say, hey, can I get that guide? And I'll just text you the link to download it.
That is awesome, man. Thank you so much for providing that. I really appreciate that. James, I look forward to keeping up with you in the future and seeing what you got going on and hopefully, you know, maybe even attending a Dodger Cubs game and watching the Dodgers take home the win for the day. And
they probably will. We've completely dropped our entire team. But I do want to say, Raymond, that had shows like yours existed when I got my start in this industry, I would have done it a lot faster. I would have gotten to where I wanted to go a lot faster. So I just want to give a vote of thanks to you, just, you know, one, for having me on your show, but two, for doing a show like this, because doing shows like this are empowering your listeners to take the steps forward that they need. That gives them the clarity. It gives them the confidence to move forward. So just a huge vote of thanks for you for doing this show. It is epic, man.
What did I tell you? I really hope that you left this interview feeling energized and motivated to just go out there, try something new, and shoot. My biggest takeaway from this interview with James was probably the part where he was talking about the two different types of photographers, those who become overly technical and then those who just kind of feel their way through everything. And they, as you know, they both have a place in the world of photography, but figuring out who you are is going to be key to finding that success. And James found that while he could do the technical side of things and make an image technically perfect, what he wanted is for the viewer to feel something, to feel an emotion when they looked at the image, to feel a certain way. And therefore, he started moving towards that direction in the way that he conducts his shoots. So, I mean, just really interesting stuff. And like, this is one of the reasons why I love doing this podcast, is just the amount of things that you can learn about photography. And we realize it's more than just one thing. You know, everybody has their own style. Everybody has their own thing that they do. And the only way that you are going to figure out what is going to work best for you is to learn, obviously, from others, to hear from their experiences, and then to just try things out on your own and see where it goes. And if you like something, stick with it. And if you don't like something, ditch it and try something again. So again, motivated, energized, excited to get out there and shoot after this one. I hope that you are too. I would love to hear your takeaway from this episode. Feel free to share it in the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook community, which you can find by just simply searching Facebook for Beginner Photography Podcast. And then you just click the button and you join and you're in and you're part of one of the safest communities on the internet for photographers. So that is it for this week's interview. Until next week, I want you to get out there. I want you to shoot and I want you to stay safe. All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting and we'll see you next week.